That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast for a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, joined once again with my fellow co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
That is Sir Weirdington Esquire. lest you forget. Actually,
you want to do the new segment at the end of the podcast, or we should open up with it?
I'm going to do it at the end. Save it as a treat. Right.
Well, you've been sufficiently teased, audience.
Yeah. New segment time. Jazz hands. Jazz hooves. Jazz hooves. Or spear hooves. I don't know. Yeah, hey, wait. We're back once again. Episode 20. We did 20 of these goddamn things. Isn't that wild? Isn't it wild that we're here right now? On this fucking burning ball of earth? Here in this moment, we are alive. With beating hearts or sparking cobbled together robot hearts in this moment together, all of us once again.
20 episodes and so many more left to go.
Yep. 26 episodes, like we're chapter 26 this week, so like yeah, out of a 77-78 chapter fanfic, so that's we've got a lot of work still cut out for us.
So Fi, what happened last week?
that's your segment. You don't get to run away from this.
You're too cunning. Always one step ahead. Very well. That's how it's going to be.
That's how it'd be.
Okay. So I think it started with Blackjack coming back. No, wait. Yes, coming back from her journeys out in the waste. I guess admitting to people, or people figured out that she had intended to shoot herself in the head out there, and
she had left a note. She left a suicide note.
Visited by three ghosts of assholes past. So she's confronted by Horsepool. Whose actual name in the story escapes me, and that's perfectly fine. And Horsepool says, hey, kind of a dick move, but I get it. Like, we all have our quirks. I murder babies. Occasionally you have to, like, come close to, like, committing suicide. No biggie, but, like, other, you know, the other members of the team are kind of miffed with you. Just heads up. I am a clinical psychologist, so if you need to talk,
you need me to prescribe you something, I could probably do that too.
But yeah, otherwise, don't be a baby. You know what I do to those.
Yeah, she does do that to babies.
Then she's confronted by the Fallen,
the ghost of Christmas present,
who really, like, invalidates her, like, with uses, like, codependency as guilt, for, like, her near suicide, and, like, breaks off the relationship that both me and Fi were surprised was supposed to have existed, because, yes. Like, besides, like, having sex one time, like, in the vault, I guess, they, like, they haven't acted like it. Like, very little has been established that, like, there's some sort of relationship going on here. But yeah, we were reminded that there's supposed to be a relationship happening because supportive partner that she is, the Fallen, breaks up with Blackjack. He walks away. And then P21 is a snippy bitch and walks away. Really sort of validating Blackjack's self-destructive impulses. Let's see here. We had the fight last week with Meme Shy.
Mean Shy. Mean Butter. Butter Mad.
Butter Meme.
Yep, Butter Meme. I like
it. There it is. Butter Meme.
Yeah, we had the Thunderdome.
Okay. We're introduced to the Thunderdome, wherein like we hear one interesting thing, which is that the Reapers were originally a sports team before the end, and so they've done sort of an interesting cargo cult reaching to glories of the past civilization that are badly understood. Yeah, this sort of horde of psychotic raiders have built their culture around sports culture.
They're all bros. They're all sports bros.
Yeah, inhabit a sports stadium. And people keep talking to Black Jeff that, like,
if one of the four horsemen wasn't there with you, like if Horsepool wasn't by your side, we'd totally kill you.
And like, meanwhile, I was totally unimpressed, just having flashbacks to like when BioWare games were good in the end. Like the two good BioWare games had a scene wherein you infiltrate an evil base of evil under the pretense that you're looking to be recruited, and inevitably like kill everyone. Or you can. I can't remember if there's an option to like walk out peacefully in KOTOR. I think there is. I think you can like say yeah, no, I'm completely on board with the Sith. But I never did. Like even on my evil run, like I told them to get bent and kill them all.
Listen, I'm evil, but I'm not Sith evil. I have standards. You're all
idiots.
You
guys are losers.
Yeah, you're
all
idiots.
Losers.
You insist on killing your masters as the only way of succession. You're all idiots.
And also, you're petty babies and whine a lot.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah. A lot of unimpressive threats from jabronis on the way in. And we meet, like, fucking, like, try-hard dad is, like, fucking, like, literal, like, broom handle, Magnum PI mustache motherfucker is
Tom Selleck in the Apocalypse.
Is the head of the Reapers. And he, like, gives a long speech explaining why the Reapers' existence and terror is 100% justified. And, oh, also, him and his adventuring party, like, invented the setting. Like, every faction was every single significant faction was founded by the leader of the same D&D party. Which, you know, it's just great. You know, shrink that setting. Like, make everything smaller and dumber.
Yeah, especially shrink-wrap somebody else's setting, too. Like...
And Blackjack buys all of it, like...
Yeah, of course.
But, I mean, within the logic of the story, it's true. we totally... Like, what really needs to happen with these, like, cannibal zombies is that they need to be organized into a more efficient, effective fighting force. That's vastly increase the, like, sustainable, like, safety and sanity of the Wasteland. Especially in context of the fact that, like, because the Reavers are so well organized and supplied, they're able to, like, exert political leverage to be immune from consequences of doing whatever the fuck they want and hurting or kidnapping whoever the fuck they want inside the Elysium of the setting, inside the...
Yeah, they're just
the
too
Mega Mart.
Like, they're too strong. No one can fight them. They're too high level.
The fight happens and it ends in a technicality draw that, like, why was it that, like, Blackjack was losing because she was holding back for some reason? Like, didn't want to kill Buttermeme?
Well, I mean, it's more she was distracted by trying to, like, find 21, because that was, like, the other, like, that was the B-plot of this chapter, was that, like, 21 also wanted to check out in this episode, and, like...
Well, I was getting to that. Like,
okay.
I thought that was the closer of the, like, that's I was trying to take it on in chronological order.
Okay, well...
And, okay, wait, so Blackjack loses against this, fucker again because it's another, like, caught me while I was sleeping. Well, like she's just emotionally distressed over like the disappearance of
yeah, like... and they still kind of like applaud BJ because like she works the crowd and makes a whole show out of it, and like that way she's the people's champion even if she's not the actual victor of the fight.
Oh yeah, the technicality was okay. She lost, but Caesar gave the thumbs up and was not killed. But they wagered very specifically the pip buck that she walked out of stable 99 with, and so she was happy to hand that over as it was struck by lightning and broken. Which makes me sad because it derails my headcanon preference that the pit buck was just like poke evolved, like upgraded in the Apple store they went to a few chapters ago. But yeah, okay, so the bad guys win a broken a Maltese EXE full of lead. Wait a fucking second, if the hard drive on the original one was blown to fuck, like how does the new one have what?
Well, no. It's much dumber than that. The hard drive wasn't blown on it. It was just the display was broken because of the lightning bolt. Because the
what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Magic technology.
Well, it makes sense in Star Trek, I guess. Like
yeah.
Terminals explode all the time, preserving the actual infrastructure of the...
Yeah, the display is just made of incredibly explodable material. Oh, man. This is going to be a... By the way, folks, strap in, because the rest of this chapter this week is going to be pretty long.
You know what? I love this story now. Like, I'm coming around on it because, like, increasingly, you know what? So I'm an American jukebox. I'm perfectly willing to completely distort like kayfabe from actual reality. Anyway, I'm an American, and the fact of our concentration camps, and like recently watching a fucking contributor on some like lib mainstream news station say, "Look, well, why don't we just let the tanks on the roads? Like, I hear the tanks tear up the roads every time they do a Bastille Day in France. Like, why can't we just rip up our roads for the president's amusement? We just pave them back over again once the parade's done." And concentration camps, and also the concentration camps, and the fact that, like, there's, like, increasingly serious talk of legislation to declare, like, Antifa activity terrorist activity, while, meanwhile, the Proud Boys and other, like, literal murderers and terrorists are completely ignored. Milkshakes filled with concrete solution that like aerosol, like that magically turn like hard in midair to injure poor innocent.
Despite fascists. The fact that concrete doesn't mix with sugar very well.
I'm going completely insane and becoming a Posadist, and like, no, just irony, like, accelerationism all the way. Burn it all. Like, this is all great, actually. I'm laughing. It's, like, everything that's happening is super cool. In fact, the president, like, fucking libs and leftists preventing the president from having his, like, why are we stopping him? Like, look, these camps are supposed to be a deterrent. Why not just have some public executions of refugees?
Okay, I think we need to, like,
anyway, one the story degree is, lower. The story is great. The story is so brilliant. I love it now.
I think it's the experience that I had reading this the first time that eventually I went, fuck it, and I was just here for the ride. Like, it didn't matter what happened. Like, it was like, no, fuck it. Okay, sure, whatever. That's a plot detail that happened. Cool, whatever. Fuck it, let's just keep going. I want to see where this hits. Like, I want to see where like, the fucking... rubber hits the pavement. Like, let's just go. I want it more bad, more. No, shovel more garbage onto the pile. I want more.
So anyway, so Blackjack is reflecting happily on like what a merry band these reapers are. Look, they've had a hard time getting the Shadowlands taint and becoming cannibal zombies, but it's good that they're able to find communion with each other in the as one big happy genocidal rapist family.
Yeah.
Where is P20? Oh, there he is. He's gonna kill himself. No, don't. Please, you're so significant to the story up to this point. And, he's primarily killed. Like, I seem to remember a line from last episode is that, like, he feels guilty that he guessed that Blackjack was gonna try and, like, lock herself in the vault. Well, everyone was being chloroformed to death, and he didn't say anything because he was glad. I think that was the main, like, thrust of his, like, suicidal guilt.
Yeah.
And, like, how did the chapter close out? Like,
It was them deciding they're going to end the war between the Reapers and the Steel Rangers. So that, like, shit doesn't get worse for the Hoof than it is now. And that's how, like, our chapter closes.
Alright. And also Skeleton Horse laughs at her again.
Yeah, of course.
Or actually begs her, like we had some fun with, no, please do not inflict yourself on this side.
I cannot tolerate you enough now. How dare you make my whole life about you? But yeah, I think that's a good segue into talking about today's chapter. We're 20 minutes in. We're 20 minutes in. We've talked about Posadism, or yelled about fucking concentration camps, yelled about suicide. We had a brief stint of talking about BioWare again. This whole fucking thing's off the rails.
I live to serve.
That's why you're here, though. Weird.
Happy to contribute anytime.
But before
I am a helper.
You are a helpy robot. Anyways, podcast. We got perks to talk about. So the perks that we get here are not terribly interesting, as they usually are. There's a couple of really dynamite ones close to the end of this joke, but we'll get there when we get there. So she gains Nerves of Steel, which regenerates her AP, which allows her to use the psychic bullets more often, and like the Zaworldo time stop power more often. And she also gets magic penetration, where like her bullets bullet better, like her psychic bullets are better at shooting people because they punch through armor more, because she is becoming even more a gun. Her gunification is getting close to complete.
A theme that, like, I, like, again, I'm now fully, I'm 100% in favor of. Like,
yeah. Now fuck it, she is going to become a gun, and it's going to be awesome! It's going to be a guitar riff the whole time!
Especially when she starts, like, rounding up the kindest people left alive in the wasteland in order to, like, shove them in this dragon's secret Genesis Wave engine.
Anyways, it's time for chapter 26. Fucking chapter 26, Descent. So everything sucks in this chapter. It is a, oh boy, not to poison the well too fast, but this chapter is like, there's a lot that happens in it, but in that paradoxical way that these chapters often are, tons of things happen, but none of them contribute to anything that we've seen so far. It's all foreshadowing and Chekhov's guns for later details that won't matter for fucking maybe like a year later of this podcast. So, like, get excited.
You know, the funny thing about a Chekhov's gun, like a foreshadowing, is that, like, in order for it to actually work, you've got to, like the formula is setup, reminder, payoff. But I get the impression, based on everything that's happened so far with these, like, setup payoffs, is that this is all shit that's going to be set up, forgotten about, and then brought up again, like we're all supposed to remember it.
Yeah, it'll pay off. Like there is no joke. There is a villain that's later revealed in this story where he goes, "Ha ha! It was me the whole time, and I just could not remember who this fucking character was." Like it just it completely lost on me who this asshole was supposed to be. And that's a bad place to be in your story, when I cannot remember who your bad guy is. But yeah, anyways, this chapter starts off with they can't go across the bridge because the bridge is a no man's zone to, like, get into the Steel Ranger territory, so they're, like, strapped for options, and they don't want to go across the river because they'll know they'll get shot. They don't want to go through, like, other things, so, like, their best plan is to go underground. So they, like, go back to the Native American allegory dogs and converse with them about the area. Because, like, well, you know the area. You might be able to, like, get us a tunnel that can go through. And, like, they have a conversation with the, with Rover, the, like, the robotic Native American allegory dog, where he, like, yells about, like, how, like, the white man had stolen all of his shit. Which is, you know, totally valid, but it's, like, super tone deaf in this story. I could go on a really long rant, but, like, my rant could be summarized as Lindsay Ellis's video on Bright for, like, why this isn't a good racism allegory. But yeah, they have a conversation about how, like, the robo dogs went to the village and, like, they were gonna fight each other, but then they, like, managed to, like, find a common ground by being attacked by monsters, and, like, trade will save the waste is brought up again because them trading is, like, what helped them, like, build that community. And it's like, fuck off with this fucking trade will save the waste
plot. Also the arrival of a mutual enemy.
I mean, yeah, of course.
We've talked about that before, but, like, that is, like, a Carl Schmitt classic. Like, that's like core to fascist ideology, that the only way to have, like, positive relations with another is to have a mutual hatred to build that relationship. Yes. Upon
you have to have a bad guy to fight.
Whoops. Okay. Right.
Yeah, whoops. But yeah, we have a dumb fucking memory orb that doesn't matter. Like, it's mattered the least about this. It just foreshadows that there's going to be cybernetic, like, dogs. Like, not dog people. Like, not anthropomorphic dogs. Like, dogs. But they're cybered up and they're, like, dangerous because they're, like, robot dogs that fight. And that's just foreshadowing for that. There is a weird discussion about, like, the fact that, like, the cyber dogs are better at, like, constructing things because, like, they have thumbs. They have, like, opposable thumbs and fingers that, like, ponies don't have, and, like, they make a big deal about thumbs, and that's a recurring thing in this story, thumbs, and I almost kind of enjoy it because it's so stupid, because, like, well, yeah, like, they have hands, they can make things, like... It's a character detail that goes a long way to make Rover feel like more of a character and not an allegory by being, like... Well, he has, like, a thing about him where he's like, well, you know, we're better. We have thumbs. And he always makes a big deal about having hands and Bony's not having hands. It's a fun quirk.
You know, it's even better. It's even more amazing. What should be an inevitability of ponies with cyber hands. Marinate with me on that nightmare. Sit with me for a moment.
Viewers that have read this story, laugh with me. Oh, I'm gonna have to cut, like, half of that. Don't think about it. Blow it out of your mind. Do not think about it. We'll get to it later. I'm seeing stars over this, though. Just so you know.
But the jury will disregard very well. So, I guess to get our minds off of it, which I can't, actually. Like, there's two possibilities, and one of them is exquisite. The other is boring as shit, and so I expect boring as shit. So anyway, you know what's a, like, I held my tongue a moment ago, but you know what's a really good opening to peace negotiations?
Uh-huh.
Infiltrating the territory of the people you're trying to, like, open a dialogue with.
Oh, it's fine. I mean, the Steel Rangers are assholes anyways. Like, they'll be retroactively forgiven for all this shit because, like, the Steel Rangers are, like, are if the Enclave didn't exist, would be the most xenophobic fascist faction in the setting by like a huge stretch. So it doesn't.
Yeah, you know it's a real good. What's a great way to like get in good with that kind of crowd? Is to show up in their territory unannounced.
I know. It's just be like, hi, guys.
And presumably armed.
We come bearing peace and also these poisoned blankets. Oh, I'm gonna have to edit so much of this because of that laugh. I hate that.
Nope. Don't you dare.
No, I know, but like I'm gonna have to like it's gonna be so like it's gonna be peaked so bad. Don't worry about it. Editing things. Anyways,
it's perfect.
Anyways, the much more
perfect the way it is. The peaking is an asset.
The more infuriating thing about this conversation isn't the conversation about hands. It's the conversation about the fact that Sombra doesn't know how to write again, and he's like, you know, Rover's like, oh, you know, you remind me a lot of Golden Blood, and it's like, oh yeah, cool. You didn't have to actually like spell that out for the audience. We get it. Your fascist dictator. Who meant well is equivalent to your main character, who is kind of a fash that means well, but apparently that needs to be spelled out for us.
Oh, god damn it. I mean, they're not at all similar. Like, one is, like, a fucking, like, Goebbels, like, level, like, sort of Steve Bannon would-be, or actually more like Dick Cheney. Steve Bannon desperately wishes he was Dick Cheney, but... he imagines himself to be Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is Dick Cheney.
the blackest hearted man in the world.
So like there's all kinds of flavors of fash, just like ice cream. And like a fucking cop. Like a street level enforcer is nothing like nothing a high-end like political agent.
No, of course not. But it's trying to go for a thing, and it's not very good. So there is a bunch about this chapter I actually like. We haven't gotten to it yet, but there is parts I do like. But yay, we're going underground. Going underground is always terrible in this story. Always bad things always happen when they go underground. But before that, they go to a rock museum. They go to the rock exhibit at the pony museum they were at before. I do not remember why. I believe it's to scavenge supplies, like it often is. But, they have a conversation with Scotch Tape. Scotch Tape is
get a bass boost and a cardboard cutout of Gene Simmons.
It's pony Gene Simmons. Pony Kiss. That probably exists somewhere on the internet. Like, if I googled pony kiss, I'd probably get, like...
Yeah, undoubtedly. So anyway, they take a confusing detour.
They go to the, like the rocks of Equestria, and it's just it's plot it's a bunch of plot detail stuff. But I'll smooth it out into there is meteorites in the setting, and meteorite metal is bad in this story because it's space stuff, and the space in space is cursed in the setting. The moon is filled with ghosts kind of thing, kind of joke. When they get there though, they're like, hi, like they're like, cause they're in a rainstorm or something like that. And they notice like the mud that they had left in, like it's like hoof prints get like made in it. So they realize that like someone invisible is following them. So yay, it's back to fighting zebras again. Lancer shows up with his crew of invisible zebras, and they have a gunfight with them for a while. Rampage goes cool kung fu mom on them for a while. There's a lot of dumb bullshit here that's for a bunch of mythology navel gazing that doesn't matter. Rampage starts yelling in a weird accented zebran language for a while. BJ gets
just to disrupt your flow and interrupt. I'm suddenly reminded of like the like semi obscure comic book memes of like Wolverine's ace is the best is what he does, but because there's no consequences for him ever being injured, he is almost certainly the most incompetent physical fighter alive. Like, mm-hmm. It weren't for the fact that, like, he just will infinitely get back up.
Yes. He will just he'll bounce back like rubber. But yeah, during this, Blackjack gets your cool katana, because the case gets lockpicked or smashed or something like that. I think 21 picks it because he has higher lockpick skill. So BJ has your cool katana. Like, it just says it's a really sweet looking sword, but like, I refuse to believe it's anything besides like an anime katana. But it's made of special metal that can cut through anything, because it's made of the meteorite metal, colloquially in the setting known as star metal. I will have many things to say about star metal in the coming months. But yeah, they fight and have a big hoedown with Lancer. They kind of beat him back, and they end up retreating after stealing all the rocks from the museum. Turns out Rampage has adopted some other personality of a zebra who still didn't know like the apocalypse happened, basically, and they converse with her for a while. Apparently she knew Twist. This is Twist's girlfriend, I guess, that this is this personality, because she mentions Twist as well. They have to empty a clip into her head a couple of times to get her to like go back to being Rampage. Not really anything important happened, just kind of shit happened. Also along the way, we like learned that like Sakashi, the cool zebra storytelling mom, has more going on with her than we previously thought, so BJ goes to question her about this. That like prompts them to head back to Chapel. Yay, more Chapel. That's definitely what I wanted to see more of in the story.
Oh yes, Madame Cleo was always a double agent, don't you know?
Basically. But yeah, they go back to Chapel. BJ has a frank conversation with Sakashi. Sakashi like reveals that she had like had a long storied life as like a like assassin or something for the zebra remnant. She was some sort of badass military official, like of some kind. And then she was inevitably taken as the Kaiser's wife, because the like zebra remnant are run by a Kaiser, or Caesar, depending on how you pronounce it. And she got like really like disenfranchised with the whole like terrorist organization she was basically part of. And once she had her kid, she decided to just check out. But not before like learning a whole bunch of shit about like zebra mythology, which caused her to question a lot of like the zebra motives in the first place. But yeah, so she decided to drop flags and hide, and that's why she's being hunted by Lancer. But now we get to learn about a dumb mythological lore thing again that I hate. So along the way, while she's talking about this, she talks about like, oh, well, I prayed to the stars and like for salvation, and I guess I got what I wanted, just like Blackjack did. BJ was talking about like, isn't that like supposed to be really dumb in zebra mythology? And she's like, well, it happens a bunch in mythology as well. Then we get to learn about my least favorite thing, and this is gonna set the tone by its name alone. We get to learn about the Eater of Souls. Yeah, just let that ruminate in your brains for a hot second. The Eater of Souls. So, in zebra mythology, which since this is a story, mythology is all in fact, you know, verbatim fact.
Oh, it's Blackjack.
No.
What? Okay.
The Eater of Souls is a thing that happened where the area where Hoofington used to stand on was a zebrakin, it was like the capital of the zebrakin empire for a really long time before it got moved. And the reason it got moved is because they became too like prideful and arrogant. They like decided to like call down one of the stars itself to use it as like a power source. So they turned the whole city into a giant magical glyph and pulled a star out of the sky. And that star hit the city and blew it up. So Sakashi is convinced a dark god lives underneath the city that is just around, and that's one of the stars, I guess.
All right. Well, based on the name alone and the like boring generic evidence of it, like every bad thing eats souls. Like that's just okay. It's an evil supernatural force. What's it do? Eat souls? And obviously, I thought this like tied back to something like. It was recent, because I forgot to mention in our thing that Rape Horde Dad has magic eyes that can see power levels, and was able to like observe that by looking at her that Blackjack has not only killed people but unconsciously devoured their pain, devoured their essence in doing so. And that's why she's getting, like, exponentially more powerful over time? Did I misunderstand that, or misremember?
No, I think you're kind of on the level. Like, I think it's a little bit more metaphorical than I think you're interpreting it as. But at the same time, also not, because, like, the metaphysics of Project Horizons is wonky, so you could easily also just be right about that. Souls play a really huge factor in this story, so the idea that, like, BJ is on some sort of thematic way kind of devouring the souls of other people to gain strength is not preposterous of an interpretation to take of that, of Big Daddy looking into her soul and seeing what she's all about, but I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you without spoiling things, I guess.
Great. Alright, so, yeah, more fucking lore that may or may not be relevant, at least not for a baker's dozen of chapters. We go on a detour to pick up equipment, vaguely get a cool sword, and then go on yet another detour to get even more lore dumps about a thing that won't be relevant for another, like, baker's dozen of chapters, if at all.
Yes.
Cool. All right, then what happens?
Then we find out. Then we get hard confirmed that 21 is gay. I say gay in the broad sense of is queer and not straight. Because this author is terrible in art, inarticulate, and clearly, like, doesn't understand LGBT in the slightest. My best guess is that 21 is bi, because we find out that like BJ's like wandering around and finds that like Priest and 21 had like scooted off to behind the church. They're sharing a romantic moment where like Priest is like, you know, hey, I'm into you, and 21's like, I kind of reciprocate the feelings of that. Because yeah, I've said that like it was his lover that got destroyed earlier. It kind of is sort of on the fence on that a little bit, up to this point. Like, I've been saying that, but like that the story hasn't been really confirming that all that much. Because for whatever reason Somber wanted to be candid about this detail. 21, yeah, admits that he's still kind of into Blackjack though in some way, which is fucked up and horrible. Like, he spends a bunch of time talking about like, oh, but she's doing everything in her power to like right wrongs and be a better person, and like I can't help but be like,
she isn't though.
Yeah, she isn't, and also she's still a rapist. Like, did you forget that? Did you forget that she forced herself on you, Blackjack 21? Did you just forget that detail? Because you clearly did. Like, so I guess like to like hit the pause, like, and like skirt the chair around and sit on it backwards like a cool pastor trying to tell how God, talk people how cool God is. I fucked that up with my stutter. Somber,
it's only
very
fuck up when you acknowledge it.
Yeah, I know, but again, hyper authenticity. Somber clearly doesn't want you to remember that, like, that was a plot detail. Like, he very clearly like doesn't care about it going forward, so it's like a detail, because like BJ's already been forgiven for it, so it doesn't matter. Like, pay no mind to the idea that like that kind of thing would linger literally forever in your relationship with somebody. Like, that would be a dark cloud you could literally never like get away from in most circumstances. On the best of circumstances, there's no way you can like unrape a person. So like this plot point sucks, because like clearly Somber just like kind of wants to sweep it under the rug and like pretend that that never happened, because it never even really alludes to it in later plot points. When we go through like the laundry list of BJ's atrocities in later parts of the story, it like conveniently forgets about this one. But like Somber doesn't even like half-ass it by being like, you know, oh, there was a secret double tape where like BJ had a gun to her head and she had to, or else like she would have been like punished by the stable. Like, there's no even attempt to try and like forgive, like make it plausible even in a Thermian perspective. It's just like, it's just forgot, it's abandoned as a plot point. But I'm never gonna forget it, because it should never be forgotten. it's something I will constantly remind the story every time it tries to be like sweet and cutesy about BJ and 21's sort of wacky relationship. It's like, oh yeah, one of those characters forced themselves on that other character and like damaged them for life about it. But Anyways, he's basically just congratulating BJ on being a cool hero martyr. So that's fun too. They have a party at the house. Yay! Everybody's there. Lacuna plays some cool music, and it turns out she's also like a gifted musician.
Are we mm-hmm. waiting for like the Diamond Dogs to finish the drilling rig, or like
what? No, they just decided to have just a
take
party.
A break to have a party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, the story has massive gear shift problems sometimes. Or just hucks it into break for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I don't. Well. And that's all I have to say about that.
God, I'm going mad here. We are actually going mad during this podcast. Because we're 40 minutes in and I'm like halfway through this episode. Yeah, I said this is going to be a one with a lot in it. So they start going underground. They get to like a train like tunnel first. And they fight a bunch of cyber dogs. The consequences of which... The only important detail of which is that BJ... No, not BJ. The Fallen gets, like, a really nasty bite on a wing. Like the section that, like, connects the wing to the rest of the body gets, like, a really nasty bite. So she's severely injured in a wing and can't fly anymore in the story. So that's the real only, like, consequence of it.
Is this a permanent detail? Like, for the rest of, like...
For now. Like, she's just really injured. Like, it'll, like, have to, like... get patched up, but right. Like one of the excuses right now is that since they're going underground, they're so like the enervation field that like kills healing is so pervasive underground that like they can't bring conventional healing items with them really, like, or they could but they wouldn't matter, like conventional healing items just don't, or healing potions, like healing magic is just very ineffective in enervation. It's like actively works against it, so that's part of the reason. Like so I guess to like to roll back 1 second, I do like the rest of this chapter from the perspective of a really interesting, tense set piece where they're going underground and they can't have healing items. So like every single fight that they're in is like actually like an act of attrition. Like they lose because they can't resupply, they can't heal, they can't use even emergency medical aid. So like every fight down here is costly, and that's really really cool. But anyways, they get underground, they get pretty deep underground, and they find, like, an underground factory that was, like, where one of the, like, mega spell facilities was, like, hooked up into, because a lot of these places were just underground because they had to be hidden from the zebras. Since zebra infiltrators were everywhere, and there's this really cool kind of aesthetic of the area that they're in, where, like, the mega spell factory is all melted. Like, all of the metal of the building is all kind of slightly warped and melted, so there's just these, like, big sheets of iron that have just been melted into, like, pools, and, like, doorways are all wonky and crooked, and all the glass is, like, melted into piles and stuff. It actually, like, is a really cool description of an environment. It creates a really strong sense of tone, which is a little bit disturbed by the fact that they fight skeletons this entire time. Like, not even zombies. Skeletons. Like... a bunch of bones magically assemble into the air, and they fight them. That's what's happening right now. Spooky, scary skeletons. But they blast through a bunch of them. They get pretty like hecked up from these fights. Like I'm blazing through them because I refuse to like go into detail about fights. But like these are fights of actual attrition. It's just hard to take seriously from fighting skeletons. But they find like one of the mega spell controllers, and they find like the. Like a printout of a bunch of details that I think is kind of interesting, that like when the city was like going to launch all of its like mega spells because like the zebras had thrown their own at them, the like city threw a shield up, like a magic shield that like was going to protect the city, but at the same time all the mega spells like inside the city detonated because of something that went wrong, so like the whole city got like oven baked in mega spell because of just some sort of incompetence or something that happened. So that's part of the reason why the hoof is so fucked up, is that just, like, it got, like, super melted. BJ has to start taking Hydra again, during these fights, because, like, they need the, like, regenerative properties of it, because it's the only thing that'll work in an innervation scenario. But innervation, if they get hit by too hard of an E-field, like, even its healing will come apart, and they'll just BJ will actually just literally physically fall apart. There's also, when they're wandering through this facility, there's like all these active cameras that are still working somehow. And as they go by them, all of them like swivel and move around to like follow them. So clearly they're being watched by somebody while they're down here. Anyways, getting close to the end of my notes, kind of. Okay, so they find a terminal that they need to use the like Maltese EXE to like access, because like the rest of the factory is completely locked up by like a security lockdown. So they use the magic unlocking master key to unlock the system, but like it trips some sort of sensor that like reveals their location to whoever's watching them. And so like the computer screens like read out a bunch of like words of like, first it's just like, it's like command prompts, and then it like turns into speech where like someone is talking to them, and like demands the program be handed over to them right now, and they insist on it, and then like the fucking computer system turns into a giant skeletal monster that BJ has to shoot with her magic silver bullet. So that's two bullets down now. It's important to note again that every time she uses one of these silver bullets, her body gets filled up with more Shadowland taint and gets all sorts of bodily fucked up every time this happens. Oh, I'm running out of breath on this fucking chapter. So we cut into what I think is the actual interesting set piece of this, even though it's kind of weird and goofy. So one of the things BJ notes now is that her like legs are kind of weird and fucked up from using the taint bullet. It gets worse later, but basically her like bones are starting to turn rubbery, which is a really gross mental image. But yeah, we get this like super nutso sequence where like they're trying to crawl out of this factory at this point because they're so like bullied by everything that they had to get through this underground. And like they come to a staircase that leads down really deeply into this like hole where like there's this 100-foot tall like triangular black hallway they have to like wander through. And as you're doing this, like there's like these weird motes of light that are like flickering around through the through like this weird gray vestigial city they're kind of like wandering around through underneath. And like as this is happening, everyone is getting like really jacked up by the E fields, and like old injuries are starting to like open up, and like Lacuna is completely shut down because the brain screaming from the innervation is so high that she's just gone completely robotic. And Rampage is just alternating through personalities at a rapid pace. Glory's wing just fucking falls off from the E-field.
Huh.
So Glory is now a one-winged pony. As this is happening, these like little motes of light are like running into like the crew. And like every time they hit Blackjack, it like plays like a memory orb like effect where like she's like
her brain is so memory orb saturated and like
it like plays,
she's an open receptor to like any
to memories in general. Yes. But yeah,
anyway.
But yeah, they like, so she's getting like little flitters of like incomprehensible memory, like slurry, basically, where like we're given like a couple of conversations and then just darted back out, and then like, you know, her crew keeps getting more and more messed up, and it's by the end of it, she's basically like physically dragging some of them, like the more broken ones with the more lucid ones, to the end of this like fucking microwave hallway. And all hope seems lost when fucking Skeleton Horse shows up and insists that BJ, you just have to walk two more steps and you'll be able to get out of this. And she's arguing with the skeleton that like they're all dead and she's killed them all by dragging them into hell.
No, seriously, you need to have hope.
Listen, you can't die on me now. But yeah, so they,
if you die on me now, I'll be stuck with you forever.
So she manages to drag her whole crew two more steps, and it's to a fucking elevator that they manage to get themselves into, like a cargo elevator that carries a bunch of like metal or whatever, and they whisk them away out of the chapter. And like, yeah, don't know. Despite the memory orb goopiness, I actually really like this scene. Like, it was a genuine, like, interesting, tense scene to read through, where, like, all the characters are falling apart, both on, like, a literal physical way, because the E-fields are tearing
apart.
Yeah, no,
like, it's one of the only times that, like, there's been a real sense of actual stakes.
Yeah.
I'm also, like, growing increasingly fond of the idea of a mentor who, like, is, like, really has deeply selfish motives for the protagonist's survival.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of an idea that I've seen employed far, like, not nearly often enough, like, only, like, once, and even then it turned out to be a big disappointment, of, like, the supervillain whose actual goal is to provoke their, like, the person they're being a foil to, like, the person they're antagonizing to get stronger. I am similarly amused by, like, an Obi-Wan who is speaking to their Luke and desperately trying to encourage them onward because they cannot tolerate the idea of having to deal with Luke 24/7.
So to a certain degree, what you're describing is the plot of Kamen Rider Build. So, like, That's pretty much what it is. Like, it's a story about a dark mentor who's like, I need you to get stronger for reasons, so I'm gonna, like, force you to get stronger out of my own selfish needs. But yeah, that's our episode in terms of just the text of it. So got any notes you want to talk about the chapter before we launch into the rest of the stuff? Weird.
No, I mean, like, I am kind of amused by the idea that we made it. We went through all of that pain and got all the way through this incredibly ill-conceived plan to burrow under enemy lines so that we can open up diplomatic channels. All right, we lift up the sewer manhole and rise up and are immediately turned to Swiss cheese.
Yeah, they're just shot down the moment they get up there.
This is a dumb plan. It's just like, this is a bad faith thing. Like,
yeah, well, like, that's the thing too, is that, like, as they're going through the black hallway, like, BJ is also, like, going, like, this was a stupid plan, like, not even chiding herself, like, she is literally going, literally anything else would have been a smarter move than this one. Like, we could have taken our chance swimming across the river. Like, fuck, we could have flew over there and we would have had more safety.
We know who DJ Human is. We could, like, We could open up with, like, a month of broadcasts, like, directly into their line, like, saying that, like, hey, here's this propagandist that literally everyone listens to. Let's like, leave them a note, like,
yeah,
that, like, Reaver's interested in peace talks. What does this mean? How will the
yeah, literally any other plan would have, like, worked better, but, like, even the characters acknowledge that.
Well, that's nice of them.
It's nice of them to think of us.
As they seem to sometimes do.
There are little motes of clarity that come from Somber, but they're rare and few and far between.
I can't think of anything else.
They want to, like, discuss about this.
Oh yeah, no. I guess the only remaining thing I have to say is that this chapter was another fine example of, like, my complaint from a few episodes ago of, like, a good story is built on, but then rather than and then.
Yeah.
Like, I like trying to think back on this chapter, like. They decide they want to make peace between the Reavers and the Steel Rangers. And so they decide they're going to infiltrate Steel Ranger territory. And then they go to the doggies. And then it's hard to convince them. And then they go to the museum. And then they go back to town. And then the Master of Unlocking has an affair with a gay priest. And then
Yeah, the only but then in this was, but then the underground was horrible the whole time and almost killed all of them. Also, like, I guess, like, one detail I sort of forgot about, like, the sort of cool, like, tension builder of this too, is that BJ is also bleeding to death for half of this chapter as well, since, like, they can't close wounds, so, like, she is actually running out of blood by the time they get down that hallway. And that's kind of just another, like, interesting little tense, piece that I guess I just forgot, but, like, whatever. It's a good chapter. Like, it's a bad chapter for half of it, and then it's a really cool set piece. Like, fuck it.
Yeah. The microwave hallway is a tense premise.
Yeah.
We can give Somber that. It's pretty decent. So moving on to, viewer mail.
Well, it's more like viewer recommendation that we wanted to like bring up. So this recommendation comes from a user by the name of Onyx Osprey. Like, hey, thanks for giving us a review, dude. You're like one of two. I appreciate it a lot, especially someone who's like a fan of Vault Equestria coming to this podcast is really funny to me. I'm sorry if we're kind of mean. He gave I guess they, I don't know their gender and I shouldn't assume, but like they gave a fantastic, fantastic to a certain degree recommendation to do that we're going to kind of make into a segment that we do on a semi-regular basis. Specifically I'm going to do on a semi-regular basis, which is that like this fanfic is so bad, like is there anything good in, like, to read of this like community, like if you're a fan of Fall Equestria, like are there alternative side stories that are actually like worth reading, as I guess they like idea, and just sort of counterbalance all the negativity that like the podcast sort of has from moment one to moment end. The kayfabe breaking moment is that like I have to like explain that like I don't know a huge amount of the fanfics. Like I have not read all of them because there are hundreds, and there's no way you could possibly have read all of the fanfics. Like I've in the past I've given suggestion of Murky Number 7, which is a nice little like alternative story to this. It's an entire story about slavery, and specifically from the perspective of the slave, and it does not pull punches about its content. It is not about how slavery is okay or justified in the wasteland. It is about how it is an atrocity that should not be committed, and to talk about the thing that's the best about Murky Number 7 is non-hyperbolic. Like, it takes a very, very long time for characters to achieve any of their gains, but that's mainly because there's so much against them, and that makes for like a really compelling protagonist. Like the idea of a very disempowered slave protagonist is a very compelling story, and Murky Number 7 is. It gets a little bit narmy, and like one of my biggest problems with Murky Number 7 in general is it has a lot of queer baiting in it between the main character and one of his like mentor figure, which is kind of shitty, but there's just a lot of really cool set pieces in Murky Number 7. It's a very like hopeful, resonant story. It's a good story because of that. But I'll make one other like recommendation since I've talked about Murky Number 7. One more. Just this one more, because I've been meaning to give this shout out to this dude for a while now, and then it's going to be a one per episode situation. A dude in the gender neutral term, by the name of the Wandering Zebra, months and months and months back gave like a recommendation for the fic that they were working on in the Fallout Equestria universe, and decided to give it a read because it seemed kind of interesting. And so I'm recommending also Fallout Equestria Dead End by Wandering Zebra. It's on FemFiction for those that like know what I'm talking about in that circumstance. I'll link it in the show notes.
You get to go into details on Dead End next episode. but for the now, you just got the name.
Yeah, check it out
if you like. We'll give you a little bit more of a review next week. In the meantime, Onyx Osprey, thanks for your feedback on iTunes. You have slowed the progression of Meteor X by an entire hour. But for the rest of you, your world remains doomed. Meteor X is on its way to obliterate you and everything left in this bitter, horrible world you still enjoy. So we need the rest of you to follow in Onyx Osprey's example. Give us stars, give us thumbs up, rate and review on whatever service you're listening to this through. Comment on the YouTube channel, leave comments on iTunes. Podbay, I think, has a commenting function. We need your feedback. We want to hear back from you to improve the show and get a good sense of what you guys are thinking.
Right? You can also find me at ThouArtFi on Twitter. Send me questions and queries through the hashtag fanfic of a fanfic or the land that friendship forgot. And we'll try to like read those out on air.
Reply to Fi's tweets at ThouArtFi. Help us help you stop the approach of Meteor X. Otherwise, this will all have been just a terrible mistake.